Hey, home growers, Parker Curtis here with Homegrown Cannabis Co. Before Chronic gets into another great podcast, I have a brand new free seed deal to let you guys know about over at Homegrown Cannabis Co. Introducing Pine Auto Flower, producing high-yielding, aromatic, and mind-blowing cannabis plants. Although this non-photo period strain is relatively new to the market, it's quickly becoming a favorite among various cannabis enthusiasts. You'll receive a free 4-pack of Pine Auto on any purchase over $50 when you use code PINE420. That's PINE420. So head over to Homegrown Cannabis Co., fill your basket, and use code PINE420 at checkout. I'll be back later with some more info on this delicious strain. Enjoy the show.
What's up, you amazing listeners and viewers tuning in from whichever platform you love to get your podcast from. I'm your host, Chronic, from the Cannabis Chronicles on Instagram and YouTube, and I'm back with a very unique and special episode for you amazing listeners out there today. So definitely smash that like button, hit that share button, comment, all that fun stuff from whichever platform you're on to show Homegrown Cannabis Co. some major love. Definitely check out homegrowncannabisco.com for your top-notch cannabis seeds and lots of amazing new strains that are literally some of the best strains I've seen on the site so far. I'm just saying, because I love Durban Poison, and Durban Poison Autoflower is amazing. But anyways, we're not here to talk about Durban Poison Autoflower. However, we are here to talk about all things cannabis and some of the wildest stories you've ever heard with one of the coolest authors and longtime cultivators, Joshua Sheets. Big round of applause for Joshua Sheets for coming onto the show. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, man. I'm like really excited to actually have a chat with you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problem. Now, you are a longtime listener as well, and you are the author of Homegrown Marijuana, Create a Hydroponic Growing System in Your Own Home. I have a ton of questions about that, and we are going to get into that. And I know a ton of my listeners, they are hydroponic growers, so this is going to be a really fun episode for them. And for you, those listening out there, we're going to have Joshua back on, and this is going to be like a two-part series, maybe even three or four-part series. So this is going to be a pretty amazingly filled educational series and story-filled series here. But without further ado, all you listeners know I always ask this one question. What's your top three favorite strains you've been smoking on, or what are your top three favorite strains of all time, man?
Okay, so maybe we'll do a mix of both, you know? So this is Tropical Runs right here. I've been smoking on this lately and I've really enjoyed it. It's got like a nice sort of cat pissy background flavor for me. So I just really like that. It takes me back to that kind of era and those strains like Champ or yes. Cat Piss or the HA Cut. So that's what I'm burning right now. Crystal, which you guys carry, yeah. Used to be my favorite long time running strain. Northern Lights and White Widow. An amazing cultivar, a lot of awards, but just a great grower, a decent breeder. Third, probably, unfortunately, I have to list like a cultivar that I lost. I was working some seed lines a number of years ago and just got pinched here and there. The second, I saved half the seed lot the first time I got pinched and stored it and got a good germination rate still after I got out. But the second time I got hit. I kind of lost everything. We had named one selection out of a partner that we had passed in a fishing accident up here, unfortunately. It's really tragic. So that the Willie P is probably my third. And that was a fool. We could talk about those days and those projects and like trying to make your own pot basically before, you know, all of us existed in this format that we exist now.
Yeah, it was a little harder. Get into that.
Yeah, definitely. A little harder, a little funner. But those are my three for sure for now. Especially Tropical Runs.
I love the last one, man. I've had a few people on the show and they've been able to smoke strains that they named after fallen friends, and my condolences to you and all the friends of and family of that guy. I'm guessing Willie is his name.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Yeah, Will Pengilly. He was a real mover and shaker out here back in the 90s, early 2000s is when the accident happened, and it was real unfortunate to lose him. Rest in peace, Will. Rest in peace to everyone's fallen soldiers out there. You know, I mean, what we do has always been a grown man's business, and sometimes it gets ugly and bad stuff happens, and sometimes just accidents happen and we lose great friends, you know? So rest in peace, Willie P, man. This one goes up to you, bud. I miss you a lot.
Hell yeah, most definitely. Rest in peace and take a big old puff of whatever you're smoking on, listeners, and or like maybe drop another edible. Fuck it, get all high for this episode. I definitely love your flavor profiles, though. You know, not to like move on from that, and I don't want to just move on, but I definitely love the flavor profiles you chose. Northern Lights, White Widow, the Crystal Mix is the Crystal Cross is just like one of the most amazing blends I've ever had, and honestly, that's one that I haven't heard on the show in forever. I don't think anyone's ever mentioned that one, so A+ on that one. And I haven't.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Absolutely.
No, it's a personal favorite of mine. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, my man. You go ahead.
No, man, you're good. You're good. That's awesome. Yeah, no, it's definitely one of the ones I haven't had a ton of, but when I have it, it's A+. And I haven't had the runs before that you're smoking on. So it sounds nice. Sounds very nice.
some more newer stuff. I really love the flavor profile on that crystal. The flavor profile on Willie P was sort of carroty, but also at the same time hashy, and it had it had some nice flavors. Basically, what we had been doing, what I was taught, was to just get whatever you can. Bag seeds were our versions of feminized seeds back then, to a large extent. I think people don't really like to discuss it like that, you know. But it's a lot of bag seeds, and then cuts I was able to acquire from other friends. From bag seeds or selections that they had done. And then once we started getting into the scene and getting older, just in general, we were able to acquire some better gear, rolling all that stuff, some stuff. I had a lot of stuff come up from Mexico, but not the same usual routes that people do. My friends lived in Guadalajara and had to unfortunately kind of seek asylum up here. So they came up here with some new identities and new names and stuff, and some magic beans in their pocket that they had gathered while at their stay in Mexico City and in Guadalajara, just from like the urban set there, from hipsters, from cool younger guys, you know, and artist types, the sort of a bohemian cannabis set there in the sort of early mid 90s. That I think that stuff imparted on that variety a lot of the carroty type of flavors. But at, you know, the first season, I think we put everything out and I lost 2/3, I think, to deer. Oof.
No, I've heard, dude. I've had that happen actually when I was helping on a farm, growing outdoors in Florida. A bunch of deer came and ate almost all of the plants, dude. That is so funny. That is such a heartbreaking story. You go out there and you're like, fuck. I mean, you can't be mad. The deer just wanted to get high.
It's gotta be a great experience for them. I'm sure the flavors are great. They love tearing them up. A lot of times. So like when I went out and checked that one, I remember specifically looking out and seeing quite a bit of the tops eaten, but also most of it just stamped down and trampled as they were just excited, kind of eating on it, just knocking everything over and then trashing the plants. And they didn't really tear them up much on the ground, but it was kind of over and done with. That season was sort of a wash like that, but you know, we had our own pot for the first time, and for a bunch of kids in a rural town in the Pacific Northwest.
It's legit.
That's game changer, my friend. Game changer. Changed my life.
You guys are probably smiling from ear to ear like, we got it.
Oh, yeah.
I do have a question that I'm like, I want to, I could listen to you chat for a long time. Like, listen, guys, viewers and listeners, I am going to probably let this man go off on tangents here or there because he has some very interesting stories. And there are very few people who come on the podcast who have so much history within cannabis. And he has a lot of history in cannabis. So my first question to you is, you kind of just told us your backstory at getting into cannabis. Now, what was like your actual backstory of getting into like legitimate cannabis? What was like the first crazy grow operation, or maybe some of the wildest stories when you were 18 or just getting into cannabis? What were some of those moments that you were like, holy shit, like I'm in it? Like, when were some of those moments? Like, if you can share, I don't know how much you can share.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, my first experience with cannabis was seeing my grandmother on my father's side consume it. I'm El Salvadorian on that side. So the culture is a little bit more permissive with cannabis. At least it was before the politics took over there. My first time smoking was with some older kids when I was like at the very end of middle school, going into high school. My first time really like 14, messing around.
15,
and,
just,
yeah, yeah.
Sorry, not then, to interrupt you. You're like 14, 15?
Yeah, 13, unfortunately. You know,
13, okay.
I know there's probably not a lot of kids listening to this, but.
Don't, you know, when you're older, you're like, don't do it, kids. But back then you're like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally, you know, groups like High Times and all of us have all sort of just been like, yeah, smoke it up, guys. Cause we all started smoking pretty young.
I know. So it's like about that 13, I started at 14.
I ran hot in the trenches for a minute. I grew on a reservation to avoid, police detection and outside of a military base where a logging company owns a lot of property. You're just trying to hide, trying not to get caught as much as possible. Eventually I did. Unfortunately, we could go into that at another venture, but my first experience with things from a papered up legal standpoint was getting out of prison, serving my first sentence for growing weed. So the prison guards were kind of snickering and giving me a hard time one night about a week before I got out. And it just so happened that I got out up here in 2012 in December. And that's when cannabis was legalized. And they were snickering because I was one of the very few people up here that went to actual prison for growing and did a nominal amount of time. Respect to all the lifers out there and the guys stuck and freelance galore. And anybody else's homies that are sitting that shouldn't be, you know. But I got out from there and I was kind of confused. I was like, why are these guys giving me a hard time about my crime and cannabis and stuff? I popped on the TV. I had been working as a nurseryman, and the nursery owner that I was on work release. So every day I would leave and come back to prison and go grow in a nursery, in a square nursery. And the owner had been asking me, when are you going to leave me and grow weed? Because pretty periodically over the course of that month. And I thought it was a rather bizarre, and I was kind of out of the loop. And then I seen the news and what was happening, and I seen everybody smoking at the Space Needle the first night, and they were lit. And I was just like, oh, wow, my life is going to change completely again. And it most certainly did. Pretty shortly after that, I was released off of the probation just because the state didn't have a lot of money for it and was busy. They wanted some of that pot tax actually probably to pay for it. That's how they are up here sometimes. but as soon as I was off that, maybe 3-4 months later, I was off to the races, and I just pulled double duty at the nursery and then set up my first consultation business up here, helping guys do IPM and set up their grows and maintain their grows and be successful all the way to flower. That time it was medical up here. Okay. So I guess Washington's bill was called the Compassionate Care Act. It falls under RCW 69 here, which I always giggle about. if it had been 69-420, I probably would have been a lot more excited about it. But.
Yeah, that would have been hilarious. I'm not gonna lie. The inner child. I know all the lady listeners are like, "Come on, grow up, you fucking kids. We're men. It's." But I have to chime in and ask a question.
Yeah.
And I did want to know, while you were in this is the first, now I don't want to be like you've been in prison twice. Have you been in jail or prison? What's the time period, and which one did you write your book? Because that is what I want to know. Did you write your book before 2012, or is this after the fact?
The first time. The first time I was in prison, I got very, very bored. And took up writing. The reason
so
I
let's
took kind up
of
writing,
talk about that. Yeah, yeah, like let us into your mindset. Let us into all of that. Like honestly, there's a lot of listeners that might be able to relate and or might be dealing with that right now.
Yeah, you know, we just went through the pandemic and stuff, and periods of isolation can be difficult. Just being cut off from your loved ones and stuff can be difficult to deal with. And I turned to scrawling things in myself on paper, you know, handwriting stuff. At the time, they were setting up a program through Peninsula College to teach horticulture to prisoners. So I had worked myself down to a minimum. I probably began penning my first piece, which was destroyed, unfortunately, in a fire when I was in medium security. And then the book Homegrown Marijuana is actually the second thing I tried to write. While helping them with the program at Peninsula, it began as a form of syllabus for the college to instruct hydroponics. So fortunately, that first piece I did is vetted by a college and has been used as curriculum in several programs academically, just to try to, you know, familiarize students nowadays with soilless cultivation. Mm-hmm. So I wrote that in there, helping that program. I got on as my prison job in that minimum was the teacher's assistant for that program.
Okay.
So that was a pretty good time. The other prisoners were pretty receptive. Like, a lot of guys wanted to change their lives, and we all felt like it was just a positive experience from being outside of the cage, just in general, just to be around plants, to be around each other, to be in an environment that fostered learning. That part of it was really great. Yeah, godsend. Programs
like
that.
It's like a camaraderie kind of like forming in there, you know, over plants almost.
Yeah, from thugs to gromies. I've seen it happen in real life quite a bit.
Yeah, you got to get a shirt that says "From Thugs to Gromies," man. You got to get one.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, and I pinned the piece there. We ratified it there and ran it through several times. It changed forms. I got out.
Okay.
About the first week I was out, I started contacting publishing companies. One of the professors was like, "This is your work. This is your piece. You wrote it while you were here and working for us, but there's no like claim that the college has, and we just really appreciate you and want to see you do well. Do with it as you will." I altered it immensely from that original piece by the time it was published. So there's no sort of liens or anything. And when you're writing stuff, you really want to like be wary of your contracts and liens and that type of stuff. So it was really great of them to be like that. I'm sure that they run some of the stuff that we learned from each other during that time, really. Yeah. A lot of stuff like revegging plants was something that the faculty was like, "That's not real." You know, we had like several really funny moments like that where I'm like, "No, you guys can just turn the lights back on and it'll veg up after a couple of weeks. We'll feed it some vitamins and hormones and then watch it go." But no. You know, I had to show them modern types of propagation that we use in cannabis. They weren't as familiar with their stem cutting game. Okay. Was a little weak. But some of the stuff like hardwood propagation was great. I'd have a lot of love.
So let's kind of talk about, not to cut you off, but let's pause real quick. Cause whenever my guests mention big words on the podcast, I always like to have them explain it for the novices listening. So you just mentioned revegging, turn the lights off. Let's kind of talk about that. So there's a few forms of revegetation. There's, you know, the whole cutting it like a monster crop and bringing it back. But you're talking about just changing the light cycle mid-flower and just reverting it back to vegetation, correct?
I'm talking after flower with our...
Oh, you're talking about after flower. So like a monster crop.
With our particular plant, you can go all the way to after flower where it's kind of a premature bud that you left on instead of taking off your underskirting, and that will just kind of like pop out a whole bunch of vegetation if everything goes well for you. You know,
awesome.
Always with the caveat with everything that we do, it can be environment dependent, cultivar dependent, diet dependent.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah, different cultivars definitely will or will not like monster crops. Just for those listeners listening, you do need to find a strain that really likes it for sure. And there are certain strains that just take it and blossom right off it. So that's really cool that you guys were doing that and you were showing them that. Now, as far as the propagation techniques, what did you end up showing them with those? What kind of tips or tricks did you end up giving them? Like, was it just different temperature water? Was it actually a full technique or method that you showed them they had no idea about? What was it that changed their kind of education?
The types of plants that could be propagated as easily as we do cannabis, and doming in 10x20s with propagation media, and like shout out Clone Coach and anybody else out there still like rocking dome tech and preaching the good word. It's a great way for people in a college to kind of assimilate new college students and to run a top-notch facility that still has 98% take rates and stuff. So I've seen some other guys out there running those programs, but specifically that individual is yielding some pretty good results now. You know, just the standard propagation dome stuff. They weren't really up to speed on it. They weren't up to speed on doing ornamentals like that. Some of the guys there weren't really up to speed on what like cut flower and ornamental businesses really entail and like how you make money there from a 9-to-5. And I fortunately had some experience. So,
well, that's good. So you kind of brought in a lot of like the kind of juice or like not juicy bits, but like the good stuff for him. You really gave him the well-rounded knowledge and really showed him some like good quality stuff. Now, with you beginning to do all that and having written your book, do you think is that at the point, you know, publishing your book, is that where you took cultivation like really to the next level, or you know, do you see yourself always every day taking cultivation to the next level? And like, what can we see for the, in the future? Like, do you have any future, you know, massive future goals and things like that?
That's an incredible question. And I super appreciate that. So, it's the opposite of what you might think. That 2012 period, I experienced my first restrictions. Before that, the restrictions were being caught. Right. So I had much larger grows. I believe I can. Yeah, like we're way past statute of limitations. As a young man and as a kid, I had gardens that were up above 250 plants. I just tried to get as many out as I could. And like when you're sort of just making your own seed and then trying to select some cannabis out of there to reproduce for the next year, then using the seed lot for a couple years and then running another seed crop again, you know, you want to plant as much as you can. I mean, 250 is actually a really small selection size compared to, say, Monsanto and what they do with corn or anything else, oats, soybean.
Yeah. They do like 10,000 sometimes on them on those farms, and they'll run right through all those.
Yeah. Yeah, the most I've ever worked with cannabis is a gross inside of a 502 here.
Okay. Yeah, I think the most I've ever worked completely is legal like with maybe that 20 too. Plants.
That's a really good number. That's a really good number, though. There were huge parts of my career where, you know, I was in a closet or in a basement with a small amount. Like, probably what a lot of guys would think is a laughable amount. But if you stick with it and you keep working in the industry, there's a lot of different types of gardens you can get into. There's a lot of different types of bosses you can have, or a lot of different types of setups you and your boys can run. So you can get a lot of experience, different angles that way.
So from the restrictions, what happened? Did you end up like fighting them, and did you find a peak or a pinnacle after that, that kind of really launched you into a new age? What was the future like after those restrictions?
At first I was like pretty excited. A big part of like the dream for me and living the dream with what we do was like riding up and down Pac Ave here and just going to like over 24 different dispensaries and shopping packs, you know, after a couple successful runs, and then shopping packs for my boys and just having it all like, there's no hard feelings about it. Johnny Law isn't mad. Uncle Sam doesn't care. You know, like that whole part of it was really great. So that part of it for me, really, I like that, stuck out.
I really like that, man. And I think that's something special, just because I do remember the days of growing in closets and always stressing the law. I'm going to knock on wood there. And I don't do anything illegal now because I'm in a legal state. I just don't want things to happen. But, when I was doing things dumb and stupid as a young kid, there were many moments where I almost was caught, but I never was caught. So I'm glad for that. But man, yeah, it's when you're not stressing about buying your medicine, or you're not stressing about just smoking or growing, or, and you're like, you know, like a cop could come to your house and they'd be like, oh, nice, sick plants, and walk out, and you're not going out in handcuffs. You know what I mean? Like that is like, it is a really nice feeling. And I can't even imagine what that was. Probably just a little overwhelming, to be honest, for someone who's been to prison for so long for the plant. You're like, you know, I'm sure it's a mixture of emotions, a little anger and little other things, but I mean, I'm sure mostly happiness. I'm sure you're just like, fuck yes, man, this is life. Pinch me, I'm dreaming. So
at first
I'm
it was like 45 plants was really the most that we could put together. And then some of the counties here had different like regulations and stuff. So at first it was fun in a weird way, like, all right, how much can we prop out in with 15 in an unlimited canopy space? How big can we get these guys without it being detriment to the yield and the product and crack it off? After that faded, yeah, it was pretty annoying. And we, pretty quickly realized that we had imprisoned the plant more than it had previously been in a way. Ironically.
Gotcha. Yeah, it seems like the more we make laws, the more we restrict it in a weird way. In Colorado alone, they keep going after med license and care, and you know, they go after plant limits and all sorts of things every single year. So I could bitch about that I could literally complain about that for a whole episode. I think I have several episodes where I complain about that. So now to get into more fun topics, not to start a whole rant episode.
No. I mean, if young guys listening want to wade in and do some work for the culture and start in a grassroots way in their local area, that type of advocacy, just going to your liquor control board or whatever state entity owns your stuff and trying to talk to them reasonably, can get you a long ways. We fought several different things here, and we're able to stop, you know, just some ridiculous restrictions being put on that were already over and above what we deal with. Medical cannabis in Washington, shout out all my medical people if you're hearing this out there. Medical cannabis in Washington is still real and still alive. There's still 4,000 to 6,000 patients here by my count that have pretty serious illnesses that require the life-saving medicine that cannabis provides. The people that are providing those services specifically, the state here would have you think publicly that the rec shops are providing that, and there is some type of program where the bartenders take a small course and are able to provide what a medical patient could possibly need to implement with his chemo or something serious like that. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And there really is just kind of like a shadow guard of old dogs here that sort of try to help people that get sick because they've gone through it themselves for the most part now, I've seen.
That's actually really special that you guys like do that. And it is important to what he said. Something I don't want to pass on or not take note of, he said, speak reasonably to your boards. You don't go yell at them, don't go scream at them. Hell, write a really well worded letter, set it up there, go speak at an open council, go speak at the town city hall meetings, do all the things that you can locally, advocate for it. Like he said, talk to your local liquor board, town liquor board, because that's generally the people that are going to control anything with substances and or like anything with that kind of stuff, unless you have an actual like board. Like Colorado, I think, has a legit board. I don't know anything about that in Denver. It's a chaotic nightmare. I try to stay out of Denver. Yes, definitely advocate for it. And you're absolutely right. They come for so much of the medical. It's like they don't care about the recreational stuff. And it's so wild to me whenever they hit the med laws, they barely touch the rec laws. And it really is the rec stuff that if you're really going to talk about causing a black market, it's not like people are going to the damn med stores and grabbing their limit for the med and then going and selling it. They're going to the rec and just next rec. Like it's so dumb how it happens. And not even most people aren't even doing that. Most people are setting up in like, I think it's like what I'm, the main thing I'm hearing is people are setting up in like a federal forest and doing like full on like grow ops in federal forest, because in like legal states, it's not a felony anymore. It's like a misdemeanor or some shit. So there's this whole headache of black market era that if we did have more advocacy, proper advocacy, the med patients would get taken care of first and foremost, which is like, fuck the rec. No offense to any rec users out there, but med patients really need some love, because those are the people with cancer, epilepsy. They're dealing with intestinal problems. They're dealing with all sorts of issues. I mean, I'm a med user. I deal with chronic pain pretty severely, but I'm not putting myself up to a cancer patient over here. That's a whole other level of stuff. But just my day to day it's rough. So being a med patient, I have to drive my happy ass 1 hour one way to go get my meds through traffic I fucking hate, because my state doesn't allow med places in certain areas. So, and they keep shortening the distance and all that. I could bitch about it for a while. Same thing with Washington, same thing with Illinois, same thing with almost anyone I bring on this podcast where they talk about these states. So definitely advocate. I love that you say that. Now what's kind of your biggest irk with your current laws right now? What's kind of your biggest law that you're like really pissed off about that you guys are seeing in 2023?
I guess let me start by saying that I firmly believe that one day, like reason, like we were talking about, and logic will also set in with all of us, just as a community on Earth, as humans, that we'll realize that we're being pretty ridiculous about regulating this plant in the ways that we are at all. In the square nurseries, I worked with every plant with impunity. Some were dangerous to a degree to where, you know, the saps could kill a person and be difficult to detect, like Agatha Christie type poisons and stuff, like euphorbia. So
that's like the sucker or pufferfish toxins and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that it may be pretty similar, at least in effect. Stuff like that is very pretty sometimes and can exist just at your local nursery with absolutely no regulations. Now, it took me a lot of years of horticulture to kind of like figure that out. And also like a Dahlia Society lady, shout out Betty.
Shout out Betty
put me on to a whole bunch of stuff like that, and we would have a great time working it.
That is awesome. That actually, like, now I'm like super intrigued. I'm gonna be asking you some questions after the podcast. Listen, FBI, no, I promise we're not, no, chill out. I'm just kidding. No, that is that's actually really cool. I'm getting into plants, and the way I'm getting into my plant botany type funness is I'm really not just with cannabis. I love mycology. And so I'm looking into all the various fungus out there and just like the unique fungus, like that eat this like stuff off the bottom of the ocean, or bacteria and things like that, or like the stuff that lives in the treetops and various things. Now, like you said, there are some that can kill you and there's some that can make you have a lot of fun. And we like the ones that have fun, but not the ones that kill us. and there's edible ones. And it is, I will say, it is like weird how all of that is pretty much legal. Like it going, for the most part, obviously going psilocybin is not legal in some states, but most of the other funguses, like there are a lot of funguses that can kill you, and they're completely and totally fine to cultivate and inoculate and all that. So I love your statement about everyone will come to their senses. It would be, you know, I hope it happens within the next like year or two, or maybe like within the next 5 years realistically, because it would be nice to see the hundreds of people that are in prison or jail for cannabis be released. It would be really nice to see more and more people take pride into this plant that we all grow and let the stigmas die down. Cause I wanted to talk to you about that next, which was stigma, especially with you having a prison background and being in cannabis. I would love to know your take on the stigmas you face or you feel you are out there in Washington. But I think if everyone did come together, like that Beatles song, come together, we would definitely have a much better society. I mean, more people would be happy. There'd be less arguments. I think more people would have conversations like this where you can just sit there and chat and just talk about all sorts of shit and just be open-minded, be willing to just let all the BS that causes aggression and tension and all that shit go. And I think people would be more appreciative of more holistic means of life instead of material all the time. But I'm gonna ask you about the stigma thing, man. What do you think about that? Do you face stigmas with your background? Have you ever faced them within, you know, recent years?
Hey there, home growers. I'm Parker Curtis, and I have some great news for you. You can get this free 4-pack right now at Homegrown Cannabis Co. All you have to do is add code PINE420 when you check out on any purchase over $50, and you'll get a free pack of these amazing seeds worth $80. Pine Auto Seeds make cannabis cultivation effortless, enjoyable, and rewarding. Aside from being easy to grow, this cultivar boasts a refreshing pine aroma and delivers powerful mental effects. Ready to add a popular non-photo period strain to your collection? Buy Pine Auto Flower Seeds right now from Homegrown Cannabis Co. Enjoy high yields and potent buds. Make sure to reach out on Instagram as well and tell me what you think.
Yeah, a lot of us do in the industry, especially coming from that 90s period. It's a big deal. I firmly believe that there's really just one cannabis market in the United States, and that like the way a person uses cannabis, it's very difficult to tell, like, with some people, whether it's medical or recreational, can bleed together, you know. And it's all sold, like a lot of the rec stuff, unfortunately, to keep some of these places open, as some of the states are falling flat due to overregulation and overproducing. A lot of that cannabis ends up in illegal markets, you know. Mm-hmm. And shit happens, man. And when you really look at things, you gotta just kind of say, hell, this is just cannabis being grown, and it ends up XYZ place. And really, yep, putting any of the other divisions on it makes it just difficult to even discuss or talk about to a huge degree, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I very much agree. That's why I still wholeheartedly think it should be federally legal, with one set of laws based on, you know, everything that something in the sense of when Colorado or California had just went legal, I thought the laws were pretty open for growers. I think that needs to come back. I think Canada has a pretty good rec type law. But I just, it's the inconsistencies, you know, where Colorado was super open at the start. Now they're really coming down and cracking down, but they're cracking down on the med users. For what reason? I have no idea. And then Illinois, where you pretty much, like, yeah, you might pay $600 for a med card, but it doesn't get you much. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you're having to go back to the black market, which I'm not saying there shouldn't be a black market that exists. Hell, I was aided in that shit when I was a kid. And if the market becomes so tainted, I would probably end up aiding it. And again, I'm just saying, I'm not putting myself saying I'm doing it right now. I'm just saying, in the future, if you guys fuck up enough government, you might see my happy ass breaking bad, boy. I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
I plead the fifth. For a gangster to grow me shirt, my man.
I know, right? For real. I completely agree with you, because it's like, it's that double-edged sword where you, as an advocate, you want to advocate for the law to be withheld, but when they make these stupid ass laws that make no sense, they don't do anything but hurt people or take away. It's like, I don't want to advocate for this, man. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I had to have a consultation company when I got out of the joint in 2012, like you were saying. So that stigmatism is real and palpable. It can be. And it can be one facet or step in what we like to look at now as sort of a disenfranchising of the common man, and a trade-off of the ownership of cannabis from us and home grows to corporations and big money and possibly pharmaceutical companies. And
yes, definitely pharmaceuticals. 100% pharmaceuticals. And you're I'm sorry you did face stigma. Everyone faces the stigma, unfortunately. Like, I swear to God, you tell someone in normal day and age that you're a cannabis grower, you're gonna get one of two reactions. Oh, sick, bro. Or you're gonna get them looking at you with, like, devil eyes, like, you are the devil, you Satan, be gone. So it's right. Like, it's like one
Bible
or the other
myself.
Right, I try to avoid that area. I know, I lived in it for quite some time. It was rough. Shout out to the Bible Belt states that tune in. Actually, surprisingly, there's a lot of people who grow some dank ass weed in the backwoods out in those states.
Absolutely.
So it's really funny.
Yeah, shout out the Appalachias and spots like, ooh, that, you know, where there's still people just growing and getting it, and it's a way of life, you know, something passed down, mm-hmm, from dad to son, or grandma to grandson, or, you know,
still rolling, like,
something
hand,
just normal,
like Nepalese temple balls and stuff like that.
Just a normal
plan, I miss, you know? Those It is a normal plant. And I talk about that in the, I don't know if you listened to the history of cannabis episode where I went into like the whole history of it, but like where like it's been in the, it's the number one plant in the Chinese Book of Medicine for herbal plants and medicinal plants. And it's like, there's 10,000 of them. It's number one. So we've used it for countless centuries, let alone in just all America alone. We've used it for hundreds of years as hemp, and the queen used it for England for hemp as far as, you know, clothing and textiles, things like that. So yeah, I could, humans are just dumb. And again, it leads back to singular people making singular decisions based off greed and or politics and or corruption. So we could get into that a whole other podcast, but I wanted to ask you, how did you fall in love with hydroponics? Because most old head growers that I know generally ended up as soil heads because it was much easier. They either dug it out of their backyard or they grew outside. So how did you end up falling in love with hydroponics so much?
By being crushed by older kids.
Oh, okay, okay.
I absolutely couldn't even compete with. Here there is a series of grow shops. Washington has a longstanding tradition of grow shops. There was one called Linda's, which isn't around, I think, anymore, maybe functioning as a pawn store now.
But okay, well, shout out to the old Linda's.
Shout out to Linda. She's still out there. She made this formula called Rockwell Magic. It's one of the first specific Rockwell cannabis formulations I ever saw in a bottled nutrient. Super popular. She sold me back a high times. Super effective. And these guys were just crushing me with Rockwell. And my soil gardens. So I had to step my game up. I had to learn how to soil garden better. I had to learn hydroponics. Once I joined the FFA in high school and started like taking horticulture classes and trying to, you know, like taking tomatoes to the fair and stuff.
What's the FFA, if you don't mind me asking?
Future Farmers of America.
Oh, dope. Okay, rad. I remember seeing all that stuff when I was a kid. Yeah.
Yeah, I had like a nerdy purple vest and stuff that I had to wear, and it was really obvious that I was a stoner.
That was legit. I'm just imagining this.
It was a good time. I picked up gardening as a family thing from my grandpa. Pretty much, who's loved the vegetable garden. I used to run around in strawberry patches and stuff as a kid. So I always really enjoyed being in the garden and the soil and stuff. But I did reach a point where I couldn't get a bag off almost because these guys were just dominating. And that's where I saw the Cristal for the first time as well.
Your cat said yeah to the Cristal as well.
Yes. 100%. Yes.
First off, those are amazing memories. I hope you cherish and hold dear, because that is something really cool. Like a lot of people East Coast, where I'm, you know, just Florida and Pittsburgh and all that, you don't really get a lot of strawberry patches. So it's like, when I came out Midwest and out to the West Coast, experiencing that was like something so surreal. So I always try to say on the podcast, or when I actually talk to people, experiencing those like those moments that are like movie like, it really is so surreal and so fun. And being around nature when it's like blooming, just fresh and vibrant, and like the apples are ripening and just like things are looking ripe and plants look happy. It's like this whole, I don't know, what would you say? It's like an energy that the plants just kind of give out of like happiness, man. I've never been sad running around nature. Even when I'm sad, I'm still looking around like, damn, this shit's beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm still looking around like, oh, look at this chipmunks. Oh, look at that squirrel. Like, so I definitely, I think that's really cool that you shared that with us. But so let us know, did you end up competing after you got to the Rockwell stage? Did you beat these people's butt?
So Will, my partner from back then, actually was one of those kids, and we became really good friends, really, really good friends through the healthy competition of it. You know, it wasn't a thing in my area that necessarily had to be rough during that period. You know, it was also still weed, and we also just made like great friendships and lifelong friends from the garden. You know, and I met Will and made friends with those guys to a degree, and got a cut of the Cristal, you know, my first cut of Afghoo from those guys. My first taste of Trainwreck.
That's a good one. Headache to grow, but fun.
Yeah. And I mean, so I'm growing, at that point, what I had was, you know, some stuff from some Mexican bag seed, basically, mixed with some varieties from here, like a little NL into it. And then any types of purples that I could find. I had a fascination really early on with purples. So, stuff from down in Cali, like Grape Ape, Mendo P, up here in the Northwest, we have a PNW hash plant. Some random stuff at junctures over the course of several seasons and several indoor grows in the off season of those. I just tried to get as good as I could. And, these guys with real cuts and hydroponics, it was just a whole nother level. For me at that time, you know, I'm sure there are guys that are out there right now that have really perfected that wild form of doing things in a more confined, controlled environment. I see a lot of techniques that are reminiscent of stuff that we used to do a long time ago that people are really working well now. And it's amazing to watch.
That probably makes you smile, just like seeing like old school techniques like really blossomed out and like solidified. Because like you said, dude, there's like people like who have like the whole apps on their phone where they got the shit dialed in. They can change the bubbles per pressure of their water. You know what I'm saying? I'm just messing at that point, but they really do have it dialed. They do have it dialed in. But I wanted to ask before I forgot my question because I was about to scroll there and totally forget. What were some of the key things that your buddies, or Will in particular, were able to show you? Was it like pH that changed the game for you? Like, what kind of things, like besides that formula that you picked up in Rockwell, what other things that they showed you that really rounded it off? Because
they hazed me a little bit. They hazed me a little bit at first, you know, because we were because that healthy competition. They sat me down and handed me a beer, which was funny. They handed me a beer and then put on a Schoolhouse Rock video of how plants grow, basically. Like the similar vein to the Bill and Capitol Hill video, but a very beginning horticulture one. And I was like, yeah, guys. So they just kind of restructured what I thought about stuff and how stuff worked and the differences between inside and outside. I learned about lights. I learned a little bit about electricity from them. I learned how to put up a room, a faux room, a faux wall. I learned how to block out windows. You know what I'm saying? How AC stuff worked, how to avoid the stuff that we commonly run into in Washington, like PM and stuff. They learned stuff, some stuff from me. Like they teased me about my seeds a lot and my gear. You know what I mean? But eventually they grew to have a little bit of a respect for it. And the variety that we selected as Willie P, you know, a lot of people were into eventually, you know, once we rolled a bunch of better gear into it over and over and over, and then it was pretty great.
Hell yeah. I mean, that's how all strains really like come to take fruition. Crippy used to be like the bee's knees out in Florida. I don't know if you've ever had Crippy, but it's like an East Coast, like 90s, maybe like early 2000s, probably like late 80s to be real. But that came in, Crippy went into like a few strains that have become pretty well known, and then Crippy disappeared. And like, that's kind of just how it goes sometimes, to be quite frank about it. Like, it might not be all that crazy then, but you know, put some good shit into it, bring some terpenes or profiles, and you know, back cross it and hone it in, and it might be like the next fucking star killer, or you know, purple punch or something out there. So I love that you've just kind of, honestly, it's been nice just hearing your stories. It really sounds like the traditional, like, not to say traditional, but like, you're a true stoner, man. Like, you were hanging out with your buddies. It sounds like you guys were trying to grow shit. You wanted to grow shit and make some money. Fucking Popo came down and said no. And then you wrote a book, which is, I mean, writing a book in and of itself is crazy as shit. But having a book that also is like used by college and like is used in, and you're having that information back, that's very impressive. Now, for those wondering, yes, his book's available on Amazon. You can check it out. It's called, I'm going to reiterate this. It's called Homegrown Marijuana. And then you have the little, What are those called? The two dots. I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank right now. Create a hydroponic growing system in your own home. So that is what it is. So it's a hyphenated. It's almost like hyphenated. I'm fucking that up. But it's homegrown marijuana by the man Joshua Sheets. And it's amazing. Okay. So definitely check it out. The next episode, I'm going to have him back on because we are coming to the close on the hour here shortly, and I have a few more questions for him on this episode. But if you guys are wanting to tune into next episode and know what part two is going to be about, I have about 30 questions about hydroponics I haven't actually asked him, and that will put us into 2-hour mark for this episode. And most people don't want to do that, so I'm trying to keep it in an hour, people. I promised you. All your comments on YouTube, I read. Now, to close this podcast off, you've been a absolutely wonderful guest, and it's been really, really amazing hearing your backstory. Just really cool hearing the advocacy that you didn't give up on cannabis. You didn't get mad at cannabis, even though you went to prison for it. You know, and came out at a time when people were growing it legally and like, you know, happily, you know, smoking it and all this other stuff. So, you know, you could have been angry at life. You could have done all that, but like, you gave back to the community immensely with a college syllabus and creating that education. You've given back to the community with the book, and you keep giving back. So thank you so much for coming on. Now, what inspired your passion so much to be an advocate? Like, why, you know, I know that might be a weird question to think about, but what in your life has made cannabis so special to you?
I really love plants, you know, and, of all the plants, it's my favorite plant. And the overregulation of it is frustrating when you're in love with something like that. Mm. You know, when you love something and it's worth it, you fight for it, you know? And I was just kind of put in those positions, and that I don't even know how much of it at times was a choice and how much was just stuff I needed to do to try to preserve a future for what I wanted to do and what everyone is really enjoying now, you know? Especially up in Washington, there's a lot of good weed up here. There's a lot of good dabs.
Yeah. I love the dabs. The dabs are definitely, I see good dabs in Washington, but, man, so you really just wholeheartedly love and have a true passion for cannabis, man. That's really something special. You're like an Ed Rosenthal or Jack Herrera, or like one of these crazy advocates that I get to speak with, like a Kyle Cushman. So it's been really honestly wonderful hearing your stories, and just like I've got about a million questions for you. So I guarantee we're going to have easily 3 or 4 episodes. But the next one is, what is your biggest piece of advice for anyone listening right now on life, just life in general?
Well, you know, thanks so much for saying that. I don't know if I'm exactly the same caliber as some of those other guys, but I have met some of the names that you mentioned and worked with someone that you named there on a couple pieces. And you know, if you're humble and you can learn, and you can just be reasonable and have conversations with people, it's going to get you a lot farther than being a bull in a china shop or a troll or pigheaded. There are a lot of great resources out there. There are a lot of communities out there that we're forming up, you know, where growers of all levels can get together, can communicate, can learn from each other. There's a lot of colleges getting involved, and academia is once again, you know, considering cannabis cultivation for its next round of upgrades to add to its 2024 season, pretty much. A lot of companies are setting up shop with these guys. I'm seeing there's a lot more bridges being built than being burnt right now. So as long as we all just kind of work together, it's going to be a bright future.
I love that. That makes me so happy, man. I love when people, so I've had a few guests always, you guys always word it differently. You kind of go on your own little like perspectives with it, but the humility thing, man, it's a very key thing in life, is just staying humble. I know sometimes I might sound arrogant on this podcast when I do my own solo rants, but in all wholeheartedly, this I'm just a dude behind a microphone blabbing what's on my brain on a podcast that a lot of people really like, apparently. And I never expected to be here talking to people like yourself or anyone. And it is your words are 1,000% accurate. Like, did I ever expect to talk to Kyle Cushman in my life? No, dude, I read High Times magazine all growing up. And I was like, that dude is like my idol and my hero. So like, you're right. Like I never once saw anything crazy. I never tried to hold myself to certain standards. There have been many a times I've said some dumb shit on the podcast and I was like, oops, my bad. I reiterate that. You know what I'm saying? So I love it, man. Humility is key. I think in my own personal life, I can attest and agree to that completely. Like there are moments where I get an ego and then life humbles me and I have to remember to stay humble. And you always get, you're so much better off just listening or staying calm than arguing or being that bull in a china shop. So man, thank you for that great piece of advice. Your last thing I have for you, you get kind of to end the podcast with your three biggest tips or tricks for hydroponic cultivation for a novice. So that could be anywhere from specific research, that could be a specific item, or it could be specific techniques. What are your kind of top three tips or tricks that you would tell a novice listening to this episode today?
First and foremost, to make sure your environmental controls and specifications are within optimum growing range. Make sure your temperature and humidity are correct. Make sure you have CO2 present. You have an intake and exhaust, CO2. Make sure all that works. Second, I would say for a beginning guy, try sub-irrigation. I highly recommend it. It's great technique, easy to use. Some of the medium is reusable. Some of it is very slick and easy to use. So, think ebb and flow fittings, tables, in pots or just beds, however you want to skin that cat. Go ahead.
Third, so irrigate, like you think they should like drop that ball and just go full on into it and just don't dip the toe into the pool, just jump in.
you know how the swimming pool has like the waiting area and then to the deep end? Ebb and flow is going to walk you to the deep end where it's nice, comfortable, and you just kind of flow through the pool out there.
I love that. Okay, on to your third one, my good sir.
Oxygen. Ooh. In your nutrient reservoir. It just, the more oxygen often, the better. It's going to preserve the life of your nutrients as the cycle of the week or the 10-day period that you're using and the 5-day period goes through until you change the nutrient reservoir next. If you have any microbiology in there, it's going to help it to survive. Okay. It's going to keep bad bacteria out that you don't want. And you can tell when it's there, when things start to smell gross. So it definitely, if things smell gross in your reservoir, pump up the O2.
I like that. Good advice. Honestly, I can attest being a novice and not having had gotten to talk to you the many years back I tried hydro, like over 10 years ago. Yeah, I had all the issues of not enough oxygen and many other things. So, but it is true. Check your smell. If your smell's off, probably more oxygen is needed. No, those are great points of advice. And I'm happy you mentioned CO2. Very rarely do people mention CO2 on here. That's a big one. I try to always tell people CO2 is very important. I mean, especially if a lot of these novices are growing autoflowers nowadays and they don't really like sleep. So Calvin bonding is not necessarily a thing. So CO2 is always great to implement into a garden, regardless of what you're growing, photoperiod, feminized, regular, any of that stuff, autoflower, you know, photoperiod plants love CO2 just as much as autoflowers. So I love that you said that. What's your kind of go-to? Do you have a CO2 tank on like a controller, or do you do like canisters, or what do you do? Bags? How do you go about your CO2?
I mean, CO2 for me was tricky at first. One thing that's important probably for everyone listening is not to take the losses so hard on yourself. Okay. Just focus on learning from them and figuring stuff out. You know, currently right now, the tech that we've been using is a fungus, like you were talking about, that emits a CO2. And then we're hanging them up in the warm parts of tents and in grow rooms by lights. We've got a setup called a Pro CO2 that kicks. It's got a little air pump and some ventilation and a filter. And it sits in the bucket and just kicks out some CO2, and that brings up the levels along with an intake. We've been using that to stay a little more covert and not have exhaust and dial in our control a little bit in CO2 and experimenting with sort of these positively charged setups and rooms that way. And
how's that been going for you? Have you liked the results so far?
Yeah, phenomenal. We've been having a really good time with it. I might not go back for small setups.
Oh, good to hear.
Yeah. Like, you know, we got a garage setup with the CO2 with tanks and everything. And it's just like, you know, this for the smaller controlled stuff, it's nicer and it's a lot cheaper. The specific variety of fungus that we've been using has been lasting about a year.
And wow, it's putting that's
out,
awesome.
It's putting out a fair amount of CO2, and that with the intake and no exhaust on the rooms is perfectly dialed for up here in Washington. So that's been working out great. Now, be advised, anyone listening to that, trying that in extreme other environments, your results may vary, you know, and always, like I said, check to make sure everything is within optimum range as far as.
Yeah, variables always matter. Yeah, you're 100% right. Like, you're in Washington and your humidity, your like everything, your pressure in the air. I mean, like, and not that pressure has a lot of things, but just like pressure in general, it does have a play. But like humidity, all that fun stuff. It's dry as shit out in Colorado, but it's also humid in certain spots. So no, 100%. I'm just impressed. I'm still blown away. You said it's lasted for a year. That's awesome. So guys and gals, comment down below if you're on YouTube, which first and foremost, there's been several things that we talked about, such as monster cropping. And like monster cropping, we talked about lots of hydroponic stuff, and what we are about to talk about as far as CO2. Homegrown Cannabis Co. does have videos on YouTube if you guys want more education on that stuff, since we only kind of breezed over it. So if you guys do want that, definitely check out the videos on Homegrown. They are nice. Now, if you guys want to see and hear his more about this mycelium that lasts a freaking year, I'll be asking him on the next show. And comment down below any questions you want to ask Joshua, because I have about 30 here, and I might sacrifice one or two for your guys's questions. I'm greedy with my questions, but dude, I'm kind of blown away that you had something releasing CO2 for a year. That's pretty impressive. Like, I'm thoroughly actually really impressed. That's pretty cool. We just hit that hour mark. I totally want to give you one last thing. And this last thing is always to catch my guys off guard. What's your biggest learning curve you ever came across? Your biggest whoopsie in the last year? Have you flooded anything yet?
just this last year, like in 2022?
It could be 2022 or 2020, or like prior. I just said, like, what's been your biggest whoopsie, or like your biggest whoopsie in the last year? Some people can't think of their biggest whoopsie. It's been lots of years.
Yeah, you know, I had a little flood the other day. You always want to check your systems when you set everything up. And I set some stuff up and checked up the preliminary, and boom, I had a little trickle situation. You just kind of, you know, mop it up and set back up. A lot of times with moving water around in your house, you just want to, you know, you're trading. When you're using hydroponics inside of your home, you're not using soil. You don't have dirt in your room, but you do have water, so you just got to take the appropriate precautions. You know what I mean? Nothing super major on the flooding. The gardens have been running pretty good lately. We've had the IPM maintenance has been going really good. This last year has been really solid period of growth for us. Maybe small, like too small selection sizes. On some things, like not getting enough beans, essentially, and running enough, like only running 10 instead of running 100 or 1,000.
Gotcha. You're like, shit, I need more. I need more of these. No, I totally understand, man. Space is a bitch as well as laws. Well, I thank you for sharing that with us. And I'm glad that you haven't had any floods. When I asked that, we had a guy on here. I don't know if you've heard of Hydro Buckets or Visionary Hydroponics, but Mitchell Gorgachuk, he's a really nice gentleman. Actually, that might be a really fun episode to get you on with him and us three chat. That would actually might be a lot of fun. He's a hydroponic. He loves hydroponic. He's from Canada. He's just a big time lover of cannabis and all sorts of other plants. So that might be a fun episode. Now, comment down below if you want to see that one now that I've just put that out there. Whenever I talked to him, he had like the day before I had talked to him, he had like flooded his whole grow room or something like that. He's like, yeah, I walked away for 2 minutes and forgot the hose was in the damn thing. And I was like, oh no, I've done that once or twice where you just walk away. Like, luckily I've never flooded it, but like definitely got enough water where you're like sopping up some towels there for a minute. So I'm glad you haven't
happened really fast. It can happen really fast, man. Yes, when you're setting up a system like I was a couple weeks ago, just keep your eye on it. You know, luckily I had stayed there and hadn't like trailed off with the blunt, decided to do something else. And I was just, and I happened to have been attentive to it that day, and I caught it quick. So just keep an eye on it, guys.
Well, hell yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It has been an absolute pleasure. And again, guys, guys and gals listening, I'm going to reiterate this. Please go snag his book, Homegrown Marijuana, Create a Hydroponic Growing System in Your Own Home. It is actually very, very in-depth. I did order a copy myself, so I'm waiting on it. So I'll be reading your book here soon, my friend. But I always try to do that. Whatever. I've never interviewed. Oh, wait, no, Mr. Grow It has a book. I did get his book. So you're the other person I've interviewed with a book. Yours is way more adult. Hey, listen, to be fair, I could say that Mr. Grow It said his is super fundamental novice base. He's like, you'll probably be bored. I was like, I don't care. I'm going to buy it anyways. And I did. So anyways, yours is a lot more like legitness as far as like education and like advanced and veteran kind of knowledge. But yes, please go buy his book, Homegrown Marijuana. Like I said, create a hydroponic growing system in your home. Create your own hydroponic growing system. And then go over to homegrowncannabisco.com and snag those top-notch seeds. You see how I did that, guys? That was a great, great, great slip in there. Whoom, wham, bam. And I'm just kidding. No, but for real, go snag your top-notch seeds. We're hooking Joshua up with some actual fun genetics for him to run on top of the already insane line of genetics this man has listed off this whole episode. This guy has smoked everything under the sun, I swear to God. So we're gonna add to his collection, and you guys are definitely gonna hear for more from Joshua. He's been a great guest. Him and I have been playing phone tag with trying to get on podcasts last few days, so it's been a good time. And we're probably gonna have some more episodes in the future, and you're going to see his face a lot more with Homegrown Podcast. So definitely drop some major love for him, because it's been a headache trying to get our schedules lined up between technology hating us. And I had a health inspection in my shop today. So good times. All right, gang. Remember, smash the like button, comment, like, share, do all that fun stuff. I am Chronic from the Cannabis Chronicles on Instagram and YouTube. And without further ado, this has been another wonderful episode of the Homegrown Podcast, brought to us by Homegrown Cannabis Co. It would not be possible without them. So seriously, I know I always say drop the likes and blah, 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 but do it. It helps us, shows us some major love. And guys, really do comment below if you want to see, if you have any questions for Joshua. I do read. I'm usually the one responding back on YouTube most of the time, so I do read your questions. Hey! Ask the questions. I read them. All right, guys. Peace.
Thanks, Chronic, for another excellent podcast, and thank you, home growers, for listening. Remember to like, follow, and give the podcast a 5-star rating. And don't forget to use code PINE420 over at homegrowncannabisco.com to pick up your free Pine Autoflower seeds with any purchase over $50. Happy growing, and see you in the garden.